Night's Watch, and Alistair Sarwick becomes instantly embroiled in the politics of court. They will cross during their adventures, the characters of the episode.
This is quality podcasting, you guys.
Sounds like a great podcast, everyone.
I know, I'm so excited about this game.
Wait, should we just start the show right
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. You heard it there from Selena and myself. I guess this is the beginning of good podcasting, a.k.a. Eric reading off the news together from the new Game of Thrones video game coming out. Are you guys excited for this video game coming out soon?
It's going to be awesome.
Well, I know that some of you guys are. Terrence?
Yeah, this sounds really cool.
Well, Eric's really excited. Before we started the show, Mike is like, hey, we should talk about this video game. And I was like, man, no one cares about this video game. And then all of a sudden, I found out that two of you guys have pre-ordered a copy, a piece. How many copies did you order, Selena?
I didn't order any copies, but I am planning to. I'm very excited about this.
Is that the Swedish version of the game?
Yeah, I think so. I think
already have subtitles. Your subtitles just look like people typed on the home row all day. Just
They're actually going to set it in Sweden. It's going to be a whole big thing.
Eric, the only thing different is this time we're not going to stay up all night trying to beat it.
Yeah. Yeah, not like Mario.
Did you guys ever beat it? Did you guys ever beat that game?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, like the next day. It was awesome.
Did you get Yoshi? Did you get all the stars?
We got Yoshi, and he said, thanks for playing Super Mario 64. It was awesome. Game of Thrones game, I'm getting it for PS3 because the guy advised me. The guy at GameStop advised me. He says, hey, the graphics are going to be marginally, but importantly, better for PlayStation 3. And I said, all right, I'm going to do it. So pre-ordered, got that coming out May 14th. I'm going to be there at midnight. They're having like a, they're actually having like a barbecue. For,
barbecue?
They
never
went to one of those? They don't have those?
What are they roasting? People's heads or something?
I was about to ask. What are they roasting?
It's a dual release. Actually, it's like a triple release because Max Payne 3 comes out the same day.
Oh, but, wow.
But
my
goodness. They're having, it's right next to a supermarket. So they're going to have like, I don't know, sausages.
Well, I've been playing Wind Waker on my laptop between shoots.
Oh, wow. Can you play that on the laptop?
Yeah. I have an Xbox 360 controller hacked, and when I'm not, like, between filming, when everyone's, like, setting stuff up, I just disappear with my laptop, and I play, like, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and, like, Wind Waker.
Oh, man.
That is so exciting.
I guess we should tell people what we are. We're Game of Owns. We haven't actually introduced
this
podcast
we are Game of
today.
Owns.
Yeah.
Game
it's not Owns. A gaming of Owns.
I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah.
I'm Selena Wilkin.
And I'm Terrence Pinkston.
Micah, you were saying something.
No, I wanted to know what Eric was going to be bringing to the barbecue. Don't you have to bring something?
Oh, it's not a potluck. It's not a potluck. I'm not going to bring my famous mayonnaise. Or...
Eric, please bring funnel cake.
Yeah, funnel cake.
Eric brought funnel cake
Renly
for my birthday.
Like your,
for my birthday
famous
con.
Mayonnaise.
Oh, gosh.
He said mayonnaise with just enough lag where he had enough time to, like, think about bad things.
Oh, gosh. I hope there's not still lag. Should one of us host, should somebody else host the call, just in case?
No. I was saying with your own natural vocal.
Oh, natural lag. Okay.
You go, mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise? It's not mayonnaise. Oh, or potato salad. I'll make potato salad. I'll bring it to this potluck. All right.
Here's what we have to do. We have to get a lasso and wrangle this entire thing in because we're speaking about the latest episode in the critically acclaimed HBO series Game of Thrones, and we have the fifth episode that we just watched, and I just watched it a few hours before this on my iPad on HBO Go, and I got to check out some of the interactive advanced features.
Oh, cool.
Dude, to all the listeners out there, get on it because it is awesome if you have access to it. Like, if you guys don't have HBO... I know that your aunt has HBO. Your aunt has got it. So just be like, hey, if you have Dish or DirecTV, let me use one of them logins. And then boom, you guys are set up. Thank me later.
Yeah. Is it just me or are these episodes still getting better every week?
I have to say, though, I mean, with the exception of last week's episodes what happened with the shadow creature, I didn't really find I found a lot of the endings to be somewhat underwhelming this season, especially this week's episode.
It's the whole cliffhanger that doesn't pay off, like we were talking about last week, because it's all setting up for something that's to come, but there's never actually a big sort of end, because they can't, because it doesn't end.
Right.
That makes sense?
That's true, though. No, that makes complete sense.
Or maybe it's just Selena and I have read, so we know what's going to happen, so it doesn't seem as special maybe this time around like it did in season one when I hadn't read any of the books yet.
You guys don't think they did a good job with Rob getting knocked out by Craster? I thought that was pretty thought that was pretty nerve-wracking.
Yeah, that was a WTF moment with, you know, John, where he sees the White Walker and then gets knocked out.
Oh, shit. I just, like, sorry.
What show are you watching?
You guys only, guys, if you guys only knew what I'm staring at.
Rob gets knocked up by Craster.
Okay.
I had to travel to this internet source. Jesus.
No, but I mean, speaking from my point of view, I thought that this week's cliffhanger or this week's ending, you know, had some interesting implications. You know, you guys, if you want to talk about it, I mean, I think that was Arya like enjoying that she had this servant now, this knight who can kill people for her? Like, did she really enjoy that she just got the Tickler killed?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's scary, but she's got the power now. I mean, that's got to be, for someone who's been through so much as she has, and she, you know, she said early in the episode, everybody dies, and suddenly she has the power to cause that. I think that's pretty, that must make her feel pretty powerful.
Well, see, I think she said it, but she really didn't believe it. Whenever she was talking to Tywin, which we'll get to in a little bit, but I don't think she really believed what he was saying whenever he said, I'll give you three lives. Because you, I mean, I'll take three lives for you because, you know, you gave three.
But the question is then, if she had said Tywin, would he have been able to pull that off? Second question is, doesn't he count for three anyway? But, you know, just thinking like, would he really have been able to pull it off? She said the Tickler. Okay, the Tickler is like nobody. He got pushed off a balcony. So what?
She just wanted to see if it would actually work.
But it did. That's weird because she was smiling at the end. She was like, yeah.
She looked up and she saw Jack and Hygar just looking like a total badass, you know, because she was, I think she did doubt it at first because that's kind of an unbelievable thing to happen. But he was like, hey, I have honor. You did a good thing for me. So me and my boys are going to take care of what you need taken care of. Like, they know that below the surface, there's a lot more to her. And they hinted that. He was like, well, you're definitely hiding something. Yep. But I'll kill somebody if you want me to. And I guess the Tickler is a worthy first target.
Well, he did try to kill Gendry and would have if Tywin hadn't showed up.
Right. Yes.
But did you catch that line, though, from him, which I thought was a nice tie back to season one where he says only death can pay for life?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the way he speaks. Like, I'm not in the books either. Like, it just really annoys me. But it just really throws me off.
Do you smell what Hygar is cooking?
No, he speaks in the, was it the first person?
A man mustn't know what a girl is doing. I'm like, it's not it's you. I don't know.
Well, language issues aside.
Yeah, I felt personally offended in this episode, speaking of language issues, when in the scene between Stannis and what's his face?
Davos.
And Davos, when he was like, Stannis was like, why don't you like her? And he was like, she's a foreigner. And I was like, excuse me?
Don't you know that's how people think, Selena?
Yeah.
didn't you guys also notice that there was a severe lack of pornography in this episode?
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
You kidding?
I didn't notice it, actually.
I didn't notice it because Jorah got his love connection on in this episode.
Oh,
and that's just all bets, man, were off. I was just like, man, you get to see him and Daenerys kind of, I don't know. She was.
I think that was pretty one-sided, though. Let's be honest.
That reminded me, like, of Chloe and Lamar. I mean, it didn't feel right.
Wow.
You talking about Duck Sauce?
Yeah, Duck Sauce and old Blondie, you know.
I mean, he makes a mean offer, you know. I guess it'd be more like Kanye and Kim, because Kanye's like, man, I got the riches if you need a kingdom.
Society.
Do we know how many or how many forces that Duck Sauce has at his command? What are his numbers?
He doesn't have sources.
I don't think he has any, but he can buy them.
I just took that he was, because he's so rich.
He's just really rich, yeah.
Yeah, he I don't think he has any armies that swear to him, besides any that would be like guarding the 13. But because he's rich, he could buy, you know, so he made
but
that offer.
But Viserys was rich, and look what happened to him.
He wasn't rich. He was like the
beggar
king.
No, he wasn't. He was a beggar. He was living with people, like more rich people that would give them allegiances.
I was confused because when they were at the when Daxus and Daenerys were at the vault, I thought that only dragons could get through the vault. But then he showed up with the key. He was like, "This is."
I thought that too.
Yeah, he was like, "This is Valyrian steel. You know, the hardest steel can't make a dent." And I'm like, "Okay, so he wants her to get her dragons out." And
so he can
melt this
again.
But then he's like, and I have the key. And I was like, what? And then he's like, marry me and we'll both have half. And I'm like, I don't get it.
What is in that vault? Is it just his money? Or is
yeah.
it? Okay, because oh, yeah. I was really confused.
Just cash. Just got to. He doesn't believe in banks, and I'm right with him on that.
Wow.
So that makes a lot of sense. No, listen, he made her a tempting offer, and I thought it was a little bit. I thought it was a little weird how quickly, you know, Jorah was able to be like, "Listen, Danny, I don't think that's a good idea," and she was like, "Okay, you're right. Find me a ship captain then." It was just, they didn't allow that arc to kind of play out too long. You know what I mean?
Mm, that's a yeah. shame, too. Do you think it's because he loves her or has really deep feelings for her?
Like,
I think that's definitely part of it.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. I mean, they make that pretty clear in the show, though, because they have his whole, they have the dialogue between Duck Sauce and Danny, and he's like, "Hey, listen, I know guys, and this dude totally likes you." So he's worried. He wants to get Jor out of the way because he knows that Jor's not going to make the best decisions for Danny as far as a real tactical side goes. He's going to make decisions that are tactical and that also involve him.
Mm. I don't know about that. I took Jor's advice. I think she took Jor's advice to heart. The thing is, she didn't really want to remarry, I think, so soon. You know, that's the impression I got anyway when Duck Sauce was...
Jorah is giving her advice that's not completely tactically driven. It's tactically driven to a sense, but it's also driven a lot to his own personal interests.
But isn't he just doing... I'm saying, like, his advice to her in this episode really did, I think, was the better choice for her. I understand that it involves him, but I think that, he, you know, on the whole, because he's her protector, he's taken it upon, you know, himself to be her protector... That's right. kind of a given that anything she would do, he would do. But I kind of get what you're saying. I mean, he would be less important.
No, he didn't. There was a piece of him that believed that if you get the help of these people and their money and you buy an army, there was a piece of him that believed that that was partially a bad idea. But from where they sit right now, having no money and nothing to them, having an army bought for her and having enough money to do lots of things bought for her just for marriage would be an excellent decision for her because she could do a lot on it very quickly. And she was talking about how the time was now. But another reason he didn't want her to do that was because he loves her and because he doesn't want to see her marry someone else. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think that was made pretty clear last season too when he saves her life. Remember, he's a spy and it's said as much in the first season that he sent over there to essentially aid in her eventual demise. So it's clear that his personality has completely shifted, and because of how he feels about her, I think that that's the entire reasoning behind it and why he chooses to save her life in that marketplace.
But at the same time, yep. I think he really does believe in her ability as queen. You know, he really does believe in her as a person.
Yeah. He had that line like, once, you know, lifetimes go by and somebody who's born able to take the throne, deserving of the throne, and, you know, able to control it the right way, you know, lifetimes go by, that never happens. But he said that she could do it because she has the heart.
He's hitting on her.
He's hitting on her, yeah.
So, that's it. It's just bullshit,
It was smooth, though.
I don't think it's bullshit.
I don't think it's bullshit either.
It's true. It's a true statement.
Do you think that she'd be a heartful, kind of caring ruler?
Definitely.
I don't think. I mean, I think that she's the worst out of all of them, honestly.
Really? No, I really think that she would be good.
I mean, she's basically just causing trouble. We have all of these, and I like Daenerys, but I'm thinking about, we have all these sections of people that are chasing for the throne. We have Rob doing his thing. We have Stannis doing this thing. We had Renly doing his thing. You know, the way I look at it is Daenerys is causing all of this trouble, and she will eventually cause all of this death because she feels like she has the rightful claim to the throne. She is a Targaryen. It was usurped incorrectly, and she wants to gain her place. But, I mean, geographically speaking, and really every other aspect you can look at it, she has basically no claim in regards to what everyone else has that's going toward the throne. That being said, we know that she wants to cause trouble. She wants to cause shit. She's been quoted over and over, "I will, you know, fire," and blah, blah, blah. It's just, I don't know. You can't look at her decisions and see them as honorable if you can't look at Baelish making honorable decisions. They're all doing the same exact thing. So do I dislike her more than everyone else? No. But I definitely don't hold her at a higher regard than everyone else.
But she does seem to care more for her.
About who, though?
Her constituents. I mean, she's very faithful to the people that are faithful to her. And she likes to, you know, she feels for those people. she takes care of them. She calls them blood of my blood. You know, she's really just that person that cares so much about.
The other thing is she didn't want to be there. Her brother sold her to, you know, the call to begin with. She was raped all of season one, and eventually she did get a kind of ownership of it. You know, owning she didn't just sob and say, "Oh, pity me." She actually, you know, took it upon herself to really look out for what she thought would help her tribe. When the call died, which also she didn't want, you know, and then she would birth dragons, which was totally unexpected. You know, yeah, she's got a little bit of, you know, this indignant, you know, air when people try and cross her, because she feels, I think, that she's been through a lot and that maybe, you know, that her people deserve to live and as much to live as anybody else. And the other thing about her and her, like, birthright and stuff, like, she's been raised on that since she was a kid. Like, that's all her brother talked about, you know, while he was alive, was, "You got to take this back." Or actually, he said, "I got to take this back." You know, but I think it's a way of defying him that she seeks the throne too, because she saw that he was clearly burned, you know, by the gold, whereas she would not have been. And so she says, I see it in my, you know, skin when I put it in a fire and it doesn't burn, that clearly I am special. So I bet that that kind of, you know, that's just going, she has that going for her.
But she's also young. Remember, she's supposed to be 14 years old in this book series, whatever you want to call it.
I think another thing is as well, I mean, obviously book fans are really split on Daenerys, especially some people hate her, some people love her. But I think one thing that I especially took away from reading her perspective is that she comes across in the series a lot more spoiled and entitled than she is in the books. In the books, she's just this scared girl who loved Khal Drogo and who was devastated by his death and who sort of took it upon herself to lead his people and to take care of them, because they sort of looked to her. They were like, "Now our Khal is dead, you have to protect us." And she was like, "Holy shit, I have to protect them." And that's what sort of drove her through this book, was the need to protect these people. And then with that obviously came the fact that she had these dragons and she had this desire to go home. I think that's what drives her more than anything, is just she needs to go home.
And that's why I don't harbor any, like, real carnal dislike toward her character. But I do have to usually raise a point when I don't want her to be brought up to a different level, when compared to people like Rob, when compared to people like Stannis or Renly, because in my opinion, they all have their own honorable claim in a way. And even if she does have hers, everyone is being a shit disturber. I feel like Rob and his army are the only people that are not directly stirring up shit on top of someone for no reason.
That's probably super true. Yeah.
They're reacting. Yeah. Everyone else's problem is a personal, selfish gain. I would say that almost the Lannisters are the second least worst, because they're reacting, but they're also reacting and they're losing people. They're fighting a war within each other, not necessarily just to keep the crown. They're trying to stay alive because Rob's going to attack them either way. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like everybody else is just causing so much shit, and it's just rough.
Speaking of that, what is Theon about to do? Come on.
Theon.
I like this guy. I like this guy, too.
I don't like him. He's a
I told you
you're
how
the
many
only
episodes
one.
Ago, Eric.
How many of you guys thought that little canoe was the sea bitch?
The whole crew didn't even fit on it. The first mate had to, like, go separately.
All right, so I'm an idiot.
No, you're not. I'm saying that could have been the sea bitch. That would have been terrible.
I really thought that was the sea bitch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm slow.
Essentially, Theon's going to, you know, plunder and loot and rape and all this other crap, you know, these villages. And, God, that's just not even right, even in, you know, modern day warfare.
Well, that's the that's what they
no,
test.
Not even.
Modern day warfare.
Even these days, it's not okay to rape women.
Especially not okay in modern day warfare. I think we got what you were saying,
Derek. Yeah. No, I got
Thank
it.
Thank you. I'm glad you guys can interpret that.
But damn, like, what? Okay, so this first mate is, like, the only guy who paid Theon any attention. And together they hatch this crazy plan, which he likes. But, like, watching the scene, all I got from it was that they just wanted to get Stark's attention. You know, and it was weird the way Theon's eyes and smile moved in that moment.
Attention, though. No, I mean, it basically laid the groundwork for them drawing the Stark troops out of Winterfell by attacking Torrhen Square.
And they want to then attack Winterfell.
And then if Winterfell doesn't have any troops,
right,
you can
attack
Winterfell.
Right. I didn't get that far. Like, I didn't get that second part of it. Of like, they're drawing the troops out, specifically out of Winterfell, so that they can get Winterfell. I didn't get that from the scene. But I believe it, you know.
How, I think it was implied, though, wasn't it?
If you didn't,
it was implied, yeah.
Okay.
If you didn't get it from that scene, did you get it from the, I don't want to be spoilery.
The three-eyed raven.
Yeah, the three-eyed raven when Bran had that dream about water flooding Winterfell. What did you,
That should have been so obvious to me. That should have been so obvious to me.
Well, I mean, that's a good litmus test, though, because even you are paying attention, and maybe, you know, maybe it's a little, maybe sometimes the writing can be a little misleading, honestly.
Uh-huh. No. I mean, if you don't know what's coming, it must be so confusing, I'm sure.
But water flooding Winterfell, I can't believe it, guys. Come on. I should have seen that.
Well, Eric, it could have been a tsunami, or it could have been
rain.
The Iron Island people.
Well, and then Asha didn't even say what it meant. She was just like, oh, they say all crazy things about the wall. Like, Bran just bared his soul to her, and she was like,
right,
what
tell everything.
Well, I think she knows what it means, and that's why she was scared, because she realized.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Well, two things. One, it's never implied in the television series how many troops Winterfell has. So I could see where that could be a little bit confusing, where, you know, Bran is saying, okay, send, you know, so-and-so to the square and, you know, help protect and all that other stuff. But it really doesn't say, okay, use all of the troops from Winterfell. Secondly, the three-eyed raven dream, I honestly should finish reading, because I had thought that had something to do with the comet. Maybe, you know, I've been watching Deep Impact, and I, you know, the comet coming down.
Okay.
The comet coming down, you know, I could have thought Bronn's dream would have had some real legitimacy to it if something were like, you know, were to happen. Yeah, they're 100 miles in, but if you have that comet slamming into the sea, well, Winterfell could have the waves washed over them.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Then it would turn to ice.
If the comet slammed to the sea,
the whole thing would be done.
Well, okay.
the comet entering the atmosphere could kill all the wildlife.
But didn't Bran also mention when he was talking to Osha that as part of that dream, he saw Sir Roderick dead? And
yes,
if you
did.
Remember, he just sent Sir Roderick off to Torrhen Square.
Yes.
Every time Bran gets a vision, I get scared. I'm like, well, he's dead. Because if you think back to season one, he kept seeing his father's crypt, his father's tomb. Now he's seeing Sir Roderick. And
He sees Hodor a lot in his dreams. Does that mean Hodor is doomed?
You never know.
Oh, man.
I see Hodor a lot in my dreams.
I hope
so. Sorry. I thought that entire scene, though, when the Starks were at the table and you have the whole council in Winterfell, and it just felt cool because it was like a nice mirror from last season. And I thought that it was great showing Bran coming into himself and just making the right decisions.
Totally.
And it was really nice when they were making the face back and forth. As you know what I'm talking about in that scene? So much was said in that body language as to say, this Stark is doing it right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But did you notice that other Stark that we haven't, you know, it's been totally AWOL for a while, Rickon, sitting there being really sullen and
smashing an apple
or something?
He was hungry for cashews or dates or something.
Just being really angry. And I think that's important to establish, even though obviously they don't show him that much.
Is there something wrong with that Stark kid? Why was he so disruptive?
Let me go down a list. His brother's at war. His brother's past the wall.
He misses his mom.
His mom is at war. His dad is dead. I could keep going. That's why he's so pissed.
His sisters are missing. Well, one's missing. The other is...
So, point taken. But yeah, Bran totally... No, point taken. Well, I mean, some people are being productive about it. At least all the other Starks, at least, speak, you know?
He's young,
though.
Has
this other kid had...
Young.
Okay, very
young. He's supposed to be like 4.
Why would you sit him at the table next to you when he's being that...
Because he's a Stark.
Okay. Does he have his own direwolf? That's how I tell if he's a respected Stark.
Yes,
okay.
He's mentioned
in season one. We can't
Shaggy Dog.
Shaggy Dog, thanks.
Shaggy Dog.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, cool. I loved seeing Bran lead, and he even surprised, you know, Master Luwin.
He was kicking asses, man.
Yeah, he was totally kicking ass. Loved that scene.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do a part of the show where we take... I'm going to open up my capsule of time travel. Does everyone like to get in? Everyone?
Yeah.
Everyone, we won't play the TARDIS sound effect this week, though. Okay.
Oh. Okay, not scare me half to death.
Yeah, right. No, those tweets are amazing. Selena tells me that she's out just getting her yog on, just yogging and Sweden, eating some yogurt while she's
Sweden.
Yogging.
Yes.
And she heard the TARDIS from our sound effect to go say happy birthday to Eric. And she said, well, you know what? Why don't you just tell what you said?
Okay, I will tell you. I'll tell you what I did. I heard the TARDIS sound, and I stopped up, and I said, and I looked around.
She thought the doctor
was
visiting.
My ears.
Sorry if none of you have watched Doctor Who. So I wanted to go back and talk about the opening scene with Renly Baratheon and Catelyn Stark. I was so pumped, and I knew it was about to happen, but it was just so nice to hear. And you know that this is like typical, like this is like a Harry Potter moment. Sirius is like, Harry, well, I mean, we're about to Wormtongue is about to go get proven that I'm innocent, so you can come home for the summer and live with me, you know. Talking, you know, like Sirius Black, Prisoner of Azkaban era.
Yep.
And this felt like the same exact moment when Renly was like, all right, listen, Catelyn, I'm gonna be real with you, we're gonna win the war, and I like Rob. I want Rob to be my friend like Ned was my dad's or is my brother's friend. So he can be king in the north. We'll fight together, and then we'll hang out together, and it'll just be Starks and Baratheon like
Perfect.
It's always been. Yeah, it just sounded great. And then all of a sudden, you know, a mass caper came inside.
This is horrible. The fact that Stannis did this to his own brother. I'm so upset. I was so Team Renly.
I was going to say, like, the fact that it's even mentioned as looking like Stannis, even in the book too, you know, from what I hear, it made me uncomfortable because I like Stannis and I like both Stannis and Renly. The fact that this shadow looked like Stannis, I mean, obviously Renly's blood is on Stannis' hands. Here's the other thing. Last episode, he gave him the ultimatum. He said, you have until dawn to decide. And then he sends this shadow to come and kill him in the night. I mean, we know from that scene that Renly was not going to give in to his brother. He was gonna fight, and hundreds of people were gonna die, maybe, and that's fine. But he didn't even give his brother till morning. He didn't keep his own word. Stannis, I wrote Stannis off in that moment. Not because I cared too much for Renly, but because he just really didn't even keep that short, you know, bargain that they even had, that he would give Renly till dawn to reconsider.
Eric, you like really strange characters, I've noticed.
Yeah, but she tells him, though, on that hill when they meet, doesn't she say the night is dark and full of terrors?
Yeah.
Yes, she does.
So again, it's not giving
specifically to Renly. It's not like I know she says that a lot. Like, that's probably her her school
her
motto or
sigil,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a big old
She got a tramp stamp of that on.
The night is dark and full of terrors.
Where she's from, they get their house sigils tramp stamped onto themselves.
You couldn't see it in that one that one scene because she was sitting down giving birth, but it's there.
She was giving birth while sitting down. Those two usually go together. No, but I was incredibly sad because the shadow killed Renly. Spoiler alert. He's dead.
I think you're supposed to say spoiler alert before that happens.
Oh, my bad. I'm not used to doing these things.
It's okay.
I'm glad it happened now, though, because now we can talk about it. It's been one of those things that we've sort of had to skirt around. Like, we're all been like, yay, we're so excited for Renly to fight for the throne. And we're just like, we know he won't. So.
I know. Can we just pretend that it never happened? And we just make another deal with R.R. Martin. Bring back Ned Stark. Bring back Renly. We'll be happy.
Yeah.
Should we just pretend that they're on like an island somewhere and be like, I wonder how they're doing. We didn't see them this episode. That's a shame. Maybe next episode, you know.
Maybe this whole thing is just one big flash sideways. What do you guys think?
Oh, man, that'd be awesome.
Anyway.
I'd be looking
Baelish,
for the fail-safe key.
Baelish walks in. Loras and Margaery are just, you know, getting their sad on. And you can see how pissed off the Knight of Flowers is. And you can see how melancholy Margaery is. What are your thoughts on this scene, fellers?
I love Margaery so much. And it's so funny because, again, in the books, she's like she's not anyone really at this point. But when Baelish said, do you want to be queen? And then she said, no, I want to be the queen. I was like,
oh, shit.
You go, girl.
I don't know. Does she really have that much of a chance? I guess I don't know enough about her from having not read.
Well, she just needs to marry the right person.
It's a bit of foreshadowing.
Oh, jeez.
It's so like a plot mechanic. It's what they do in TV shows. Yeah. They foreshadow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so essentially, she's going to try and shack up with somebody who's got a good chance of being the, you know, the real king, right? I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't that make her look bad? For,
AKA Joffrey.
Well, doesn't that...
Oh, shit.
Man, spoiler alert. Doesn't that make her look bad?
No, I'm
bad,
just
though?
Saying. He's the king right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Doesn't that make her look bad for coming off of... Like, she's a widow. She's recently widowed. She should mourn for a little while, right? Or...
Yeah, but they never had sex either.
I think there's going to be there's going to be a... Yeah.
The impression that I got was it was all a complete sham.
She's more sad for her brother, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was... I mean, I guess it was his lover. But... The thing about Loras, too, like, man, he almost killed Baelish with his sword. But Baelish's advice to him was the same thing that Catelyn's advice was.
I thought that,
was to Brienne, was, you know, you're no use, like, revenge can't be enacted when you're dead. Like, you're better alive. And Baelish said the same thing to Loras, and then in the next scene, Catelyn said it to Brienne. So, I don't know, I was sensing kind of a recurring theme here of live to fight another day. But when you got a shadow monster coming after you, I guess you really don't have much of a choice but to kind of survive.
Well, Brienne and Catelyn didn't have a choice. They needed to get out of there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they were going to be dead without question. I mean,
yeah, that was a smart decision because no one's going to believe that a soul-stealing shadow demon just walked into your camp and stabbed the king.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Probably true.
So we had a nice little exchange with Tyrion and Cersei. And they were getting their chat on about Stannis. And Micah put this here in the notes. I'm going to go ahead and read what he wrote. But he just said, Cersei just doesn't seem to get it. And I think that, if anything, what we're given in this scene is just a big handful of fact saying, hey, guys, if you haven't figured it out so far, because Joffrey is the king, the Lannisters are really starting to lose their shit. Like, is she not going crazy, you guys? It seems just a little bit.
Of course she's going crazy,
she is.
But how far crazier can she get? Really, she's got the blinders on right now, I think. She's like, oh, we got, you know, I'm not going to tell you what the king has planned and blah, blah,
please
blah.
Please do it in a British accent, please.
I'm not going to tell you what the king has planned. Was that Swedish enough?
The king's privilege is not to. And Tyrion, the funny thing about that scene is when it ended, Tyrion had to walk all the way around the table the other direction before he left. See, there's this shot of Cersei and Tyrion is like walking all the way out and it's just, it drags for a moment. You hear him walking and then shutting the door. It was great.
Well, What I thought was interesting is that with Cersei, at this point, she's more interested in besting Tyrion than she is actually, you know, serving the good of the kingdom. Like, all that she does, she's not thinking in any way strategically. She's only thinking about how here's this brother who killed her mom and she pretty much hates him and she just doesn't want to see him succeed.
Well, then what was it with the fire juice? Which is not fire juice, but the, you know,
fire juice.
Wildfire juice.
I'm thinking fire whiskey.
Yeah. No, but really, like, that's a tactic. And Cersei was overseeing that.
It's a bad tactic, though.
It's a last
tactic. Good tactic versus bad tactics. Okay, I understood why in the episode. They made a great case for it being a terrible idea. But, I mean, you can't say she's not acting tactically.
Not at all.
Well, she had some kind of a plan, right, to defeat Stannis.
Well, think about what she said, though. She said that the king, if he deems it necessary to withhold information from his council, he can do it. And you see how Tyrion reacts to that. He goes after this pyromancer himself to try and get the information. But, you know, it's a sibling rivalry almost, you know? Like, they're trying to one-up each other all the time.
Yeah.
You know, go back to what happened with Pycelle when he got thrown into the dungeons. And then... You know, you look at Tyrion shipping off Myrcella, which really pisses Cersei off more than anything else. So I think they're just trying to get under each other's skin the best way that they can. But Tyrion is doing it in a more tactical way that, you know, is serving the kingdom as a whole a lot better than anything Cersei's doing.
Right.
And even more specifically, King's Landing, which is pretty awesome, too. Bronn played a really important role, I felt,
he was
in a handful
in
of those scenes. He was... awesome in this episode, but
awesome
he played the voice of reason. Like it was like in three different whole sequences, but you know, specifically the one where they were going through, he was the pyromancer, which should be a name of a heavy metal band we should create, by the way. the pyromancer was showing him all of these green potion jars from The Legend of Zelda. And did you guys not get that when you saw it? I was like, oh, man. Exactly. I was like, man, that's some awesome potion jars. When they used to make the live-action Zelda movie, they needed to use those. But he was saying, hey, there's going to be a lot of crazy people that are on top of this wall, and they're going to be nervous. There's going to be ships. There's going to be, like, pirate sails and shit. And people are not going to be handling these pods that you guys can barely handle safely. You have it in a locked room. This is a terrible idea. And so Tyrion was like, yep, bad idea. Let's not do this one.
Oh, but he didn't do that, though. He said... He didn't tell the pyromancer to stop making those things. He said, you're not making it for my sister, you're making it for me from now on. But he's still making more than he'll ever need.
But
right?
Dear God, it's, that's so many.
I'm saying it's still dangerous to have that much of that stuff, right?
Right, yeah. Right. But,
yes.
But it was smart to take it out of the hands of unintelligent people and to put it in the hands of more intelligent people.
Oh, come on. You don't think if one of the King's Guard went up to him with, you know, a knife and said, oh, you're not making them for Tyrion, you're making them for us, and, you know, we're gonna use this however we want to use it.
There is this sibling one-upmanship, this sibling rivalry that's happening. But I don't think that Cersei would have hid what Joffrey's intentions were with any of the other council. You know, whoever's still left. You know, it is just her and Tyrion. It's not like they can't fight a war because Cersei is, you know, not telling anyone anything. It's just her issue with Tyrion. And he takes that very well, from what I understand. So I don't really see it as being like a leadership problem.
You guys don't see it going beyond just Tyrion? I feel like she's becoming more reclusive because, I mean, I think they did a really good job of painting that with her watching the girls outside. It made her appear as if she's turned into some sort of this older nesting lady where she's just like looking around scared of everything now because she knows her world is falling in around her.
I got that a little bit because she does bring up Mycella even in this episode to Tyrion. Like, she's still really worried about that. She's like, what, are you going to box her up like any day now, right? And so she's still worried about that. I got that. But because she's still sleeping with that young boy, I took it to mean that her habits are relatively unchanged because, you know, Tyrion's got this great new confidant, a great new leak in, you know, an insight into what she's planning. And so she hasn't stopped seeing him. In fact, if anything, she does everything in front of him because that drives right. The plot forward. So as long as they're still seeing each other, as long as she's still getting her rocks off regularly, I don't think that she's distracted enough. Is what I'm saying, to say, oh, she can't make a judgment call.
What do you guys think about Tyrion's new nickname that we learned from the town crier?
Oh, God. Devil monkey?
And here's the thing about Tyrion.
Demon monkey.
Here's the thing about Tyrion. He didn't cut the guy's head off right then and there. He's the hand of the king. He totally could. And he was offended. He was genuinely hurt. But he's just like, no. And here they are. They're I don't want to say they're blaspheming. They're speaking treason. And, you know, part of that little part that we love so much in Tyrion for that's like slightly self-deprecating is like, well, you know, my brother and sister are sleeping together, so I can kind of handle this. Even when like it's against him, he still lets this guy live. Like I didn't get that, but I mean that was kind of cool.
It's because he's a good guy essentially, and it's, you know what he said, why are they blaming me? I'm trying to save them. You know, he was genuinely really sad that they didn't see it. And I think that comes from Tyrion just ultimately, you know, he's so clever. He's really fair. You know, we've talked about that before, how he's probably the only character on the show who has a semblance of a normal moral compass. And so he's really trying to, he's like, seriously, you know, honestly trying to save them. And that's probably why he didn't cut the guy's head off, because that would kind of be counterproductive in the way of saving him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he did find a little bit of humor in what the guy was saying, you know, as you were just saying, well, yeah, he is sleeping with my sister. And I think that, you know, since it was just a small group anyway, I mean, just really cutting the guy's head off or killing him wouldn't have done anything, wouldn't have made a point.
Well, the guy was being loud enough. I was worried that the knights that were up on the wall or the
we're going to shoot him.
We're going to shoot him.
Yeah.
I was watching them the entire scene, because even if Tyrion doesn't take offense, any of them would have been justified in killing that guy. And they were watching. Like they,
well, yes and no. It can't have that crazy martial law, or you're gonna have a revolution on your hands. Oh. There's more people than guards for sure.
I guess what I should have said is that Joffrey, if he were there, would have done that in a heartbeat.
Oh,
he would have kept
yeah.
the guy alive slowly, you know, killing him for the next year. But you know, it's just I think that those guards did look like they were about to take it into their own hands. For me,
but
for me,
I was surprised though that Tyrion didn't know that. It was him that they were talking about. I was almost expecting Tyrion to turn around to Bronn and say, he's talking about me? Really? Like, I didn't know that. You know, like, because he's such a smart guy.
Yeah.
Like, who else do you think he would be talking about? You know, a demon monkey who's about...
He just doesn't want to believe that they could really be that stupid, I guess, because, you know, he is trying to help them. And I guess he doesn't, you know, he just thinks, obviously, they'll know that I'm trying to help them, even though they couldn't. But I don't know. I like that he was genuinely sad about it, though.
Yeah, I thought they were talking about Joffrey at first, just me. And then they said that it was Tyrion, and I was like, oh, okay.
I couldn't even really understand what the guy was saying at all.
We do need subtitles on Game of Thrones sometimes, I think.
So, far away on the other side of the planet, we got to hear a lot of interesting backstory on a certain character that we'll talk about here in a sec. But I really liked – I wanted to bring it up before we moved on, but I thought it was a really great – tool within the show. I know I like to mention a lot of the filmmaking tools being that coming from my perspective, but something they did great in the production of the show was Sam's entire small monologue about just a long spout of Westerosian history. And I thought that was a great way to give the audience that's more passive, that isn't reading the books, just a whole lot of backstory without reading a bunch of the books.
Mm-hmm. I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
Particularly because, you know, living in North America, we have the same or a similar history of people coming here, you know, to escape and that kind of thing. I was just like, oh, yeah, that's super cool. Like, even in Scandinavia and, you know, the North, you know. Well, I'm just thinking, like, the Nordics and all that stuff.
Are we like the wildlings?
No, I'm
coming
not,
to invade
I'm
you?
Say anything.
No, that's Canadians.
I'm saying in general, the idea of people traveling to escape, you know, with White Walkers, like ancient White Walkers, whatever they were running from, you know,
our
it's
ancestors.
Just like it's the origin of all people, really, on this planet. You know, why are we where we are now? Well, we moved from somewhere, we migrated, we beat the odds. You know, we beat the. I'm glad eventually they found warmth south of where
or
the wall
in
is.
North America's case, we came to where people couldn't tax, and we got a whole bunch of fields and sold the fields to people
exactly.
for money.
Exactly, but I keep every episode. With the Night's Watch, I have to be reminded what they're doing north of the wall, like, to begin with. And then I have to wonder why, in this episode, they're like, we should go back and defend ourselves. Like, we should go back to the wall. But I'm like, isn't your mission that important that you can't just power forward?
Micah, you want to take this whole Mance Rayder part?
Yeah, no, I agree with what you said, though. It's really great how they've incorporated this history into the series, because you only get so much screen time to be able to kind of give that backstory. And, you know, you kind of get this picture of the fact that these guys are traveling beyond the wall, you know, hours upon hours, days upon days, weeks upon weeks. And here you have Sam, you know, and they yell at him at one point, you know, basically saying that, oh, you read it in a book or something like
that.
It's
like so, Fat Hermione.
Yeah, so you can imagine these guys are traveling all these hours and days.
You like
and,
it.
All they're hearing is the knowledge that Sam has gained from reading these books, you know, from back at the wall. So
I read about it in Hogwarts history.
Yeah, that'd be a little creepy if he said that, though.
Yeah. Yes,
Gilly would like it here. The other thing is, when he's not raving about books, he's raving about his girl or his thimble holder, his thimble keeper.
He drank some amaretentia. He's gone.
Geez. Yeah,
does that make John Harry? I think that's a good fit.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
He's like Ron and Hermione in one character. You have to give me that. Oh, God, that's perfect.
But you can tell, like, how cracked out he is, because they're in the middle of, like, the frozen tundra, and he says that his girl would like it here.
Oh, yeah, she would.
Yeah, so he's a coping mechanism, though, right? I mean...
I think he's just bored.
I'm just going to ask something, like, a bit kind of on topic, but kind of not, and kind of embarrassing, seeing as I'm one of the people who have read the books, but I am really confused. I don't understand the difference between the Whites and the White Walkers, because I thought they were the same thing, the zombie people.
The Whites are the people, and listen, this is what I've gathered, so I'm going to try to give my perspective from the show when I've read the book so far. So listeners that are super legit and way more legit than me, please don't make fun of me on Twitter because I'll feel really bad. But I think that the whites are the people that have been reanimated, and I'm not sure how. Probably yeah. some sort of sorcery on the White Walker side, which may have a lot to do with the babies that they're taking. Not sure. And I think that White Walkers are just inherently those badass things that I still know nothing about, if I'm right.
That's a good point. I think that's well articulated.
I just don't get why, you know, they're so scared of the White Walkers, but they're just like, oh, well, you know, we face this white. I'm like, why aren't you scared of the whites? The whites are terrifying.
Well, the other thing is the whites are proof that magic still exists, right? I mean, a reanimated corpse, come on. So people, I guess, all over Westeros right now, I think in every city, are learning through their different ways that magic is still around. You know, I mean,
right.
And that's actually really interesting, I think, to me. You know, well, not only the dragons, but everything's coming back.
I think George R. R. Martin just decided, he's like, I'm going to see how badly I can fuck with people with words that start with W. I'm going to take the wildlings, the whites, and the white walkers and stick them behind the wall and see what happens.
That sounds like a porn, actually. I mean,
no, I thought Tyrion Braun and the Pyromancer sounded a bit more
Oh, yeah, he wrote that in the notes. That's the only reason I thought of that, by the way, people. Tyrion Braun and Pyromancer sounds like a porno, but isn't, in quotes.
Wow.
Micah writes his jokes into the show notes.
We know they're coming, but we still
can't.
But the great thing about it is he's so like giving. He's like, guys, take this. I won't call you out. Go on.
Go for it.
You just get he's like, I've been doing this for a while. You just take a joke.
Now, while we brought up the Pyromancer, I wanted to bring up, isn't he the guy who voices the audiobooks for Game of Thrones?
Oh yes, you're right.
He is. I'm
all right. Well, I've got a bone to pick with him. No, no one's ever read that. Anyone's ever listened to it? No. We talked about it though, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, well,
even the first one. No, really. His name is Roy Dotrice, and he voices the Game of Thrones audiobooks. Actually, all of them except for, I think, one of them. And he's playing the Pyromancer. So that's...
Well, good for him.
It's a very interesting note that they brought him onto the show. So that's super cool.
I wonder if he does the same voice in the show that he does in the book.
No.
Do you mean for the Pyromancer or what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is the Pyromancer's voice anyway? If he's, I wonder.
I bet it sounds very similar, don't you guys think?
Probably not this.
People like him, though, who voice audiobooks, people like, you know, him, Jim Dale, I'm like, man, there's only so many voices they could possibly have in them. Right? But then they agree to sign on for these series, and only more and more and more characters come out of it. It's crazy.
How many times have you heard Jim Dale go, hello, hey, how are you today? You know?
I remember reading this because I was really fascinated with the audiobooks. That's how I read the first book, was through audiobooks.
Mm.
You heard the first book.
No.
Well, here's the thing. I got really intrigued with Roy Dotrice and if he really did, you know, in fact, do all of the books. So I started to read up on him a little bit, and he has over 100 different voices that he does for the Game of Thrones series. It's crazy.
Wow.
Roy, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the podcast.
Definitely. Do all your voices. You can just do the podcast on your own, just pretend to be all of us.
Yeah, I wonder if he can do our voices.
God, I'm sure he could. We don't have very telling voices. We're painfully average here on Game of Thrones, everyone.
Aww. But in a good way that makes you want to subscribe.
Yeah, exactly. No, you guys have been kicking ass as far as prescriptions. Doctor has ordered it, and you guys have answered. Game of Thrones is doing well. We were on the iTunes front page on New Noteworthy last week.
Super cool.
If only we can make it into What's Hot, you know?
Or staff favorites, you know?
What's Hot? Just,
yeah, if there's any staff people of iTunes listening, Jason at iTunes.com.
Yeah, so Mance Raider, right? You brought him up a little while ago. No, but you get some, I thought you got some cool backstory on him from, is it Corrin Halfhand?
Yeah, and they gave such good backstory on Corrin Halfhand. They just totally turned his character into something that we could really look forward to and expect, you know, showing how long he was able to live past the wall.
Yep. Yeah.
I think the viewers get some insight into him, you know, that you don't necessarily get in the books, or maybe you do a little bit. Like I said, it's been a while since I've read, but you get the feeling that he is slowly building an army beyond the wall that's getting ready to march south. And so now you add sort of a whole new contingent to this battle that's ongoing, you know. So now you have the king beyond the wall who's sort of rising up, and who knows what his agenda is other than to just get south of the wall. You know, what happens once he's beyond there if he's able to achieve his goal?
I mean, do we really see him? Could we really see him as a threatening force? I mean, we really don't even know how many people live beyond the wall, much less an army.
Well, I think I'm more concerned personally for the welfare of the Night's Watch, if anything.
Yeah.
Directly. I think that it'll probably, and I haven't read far enough, so the two of you guys may know, but for me as a viewer passively right now, I'm more worried for the wall, not what could happen later.
Mm. I think that's probably fair.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. You have to be careful with spoilers, but yes.
Yeah, no. No, we don't. I mean, we could say that.
Hey, and then say spoiler alert afterwards.
Welcome back to the show. I had to cut 5 minutes of conversation. My ears are now bleeding.
But, I mean, I would think about the resources that he has available. I mean, we've heard about different things that live beyond the wall already, you know, in this season and in seasons past. So, you know, think about, does he have the resources to be able to rally those people, things to his cause? And, you know, I mean, that if I were watching the show, you know, I would kind of wonder that, I think.
I was worried that I figured that he might have a fully grown mountain troll. That's what
it's possible.
That's what
hidden
might,
in the forest.
He might be working with that. Yeah, the forest giants, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Countryside giants. What was it? Countryside giants, Eric?
Countryside giants.
Eric's like, I wonder if they have countryside giants.
Yeah, well, he said they did. He said the giants are out, gone.
Anyway, we must move on because the time is ticking. The time is just moving on until we get our next episode of Game of Thrones coming
out. Let's hear from the horse's mouth here. What was it Stannis talked to Davos about? Let's go into that.
Which of us is the horse?
A little bit more detail. Stannis is the horse now. I don't like him anymore. Okay? Because he did not
keep... So you don't like horses?
He did not keep his word. He may as well have been neighing to Renly because it just didn't make... It didn't.
Was he naysaying?
He was a naysayer. There we go. Thanks, Zach. You closed that loop for me. No, but like he sends Davos off. Now, this is interesting because he said that, you know, that it was hard truths are, you know, double-sided. But he basically sends Davos off
hard
to...
Hard truths cut both ways.
Hard truths cut both ways. There you go. Sends Davos off to man a ship again, which was cool, but...
He's not just manning a ship, he's leading the battle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's leading Blackwater Bay, baby.
See, until we see 100 ships in the sea, I'm not, you know, not to say the production value is low, because I know that it's not, okay, every time they introduce a new setting, but we really haven't seen that many ships on the sea yet. I'm just saying.
How much you think it costs to show them Green Lanterns from Zelda, man? Those royalties are high.
Yeah, man. Think those dragons. Were dragons in this episode, too.
We keep hearing about this naval fleet. Okay, the dragon shots were great. But we hear about this naval fleet, but I haven't seen it yet. So I'm a very visual person. So I'm sorry that
fair,
I downplayed
it. I'm pretty sure that they're trying to save as much as they possibly can for episode 9. Blackwater, which I mean George R. R. Martin, he wrote the episode and he's been speaking in interviews how he's really worried that they're not going to have the budget for what is planned.
Wow.
And I'm betting that you will see some ships in that one, so
okay,
just hold tight.
Okay.
There will be ships.
Yeah, so he's sending Davos off to die, or not to die, to fight valiantly for him, which is what Davos would do anyway, but I just didn't like how the relationship is very uneasy at the moment.
Well, it was very underhanded what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I understood it, though, too, is that Stannis doesn't really trust many of the other people that have now sworn allegiance to him. Probably the person he has the most trust in is Davos. So wouldn't you want the person that you have the most trust in leading you into battle?
What I gathered from it, and this may or may not be correct, I felt it was, like I said, sort of underhanded, like an underhanded retaliation. But he was also giving him, you know, he was saying like, hey, I trust you a whole lot, but you really just brought up something really awkward and I'm still kind of pissed off. So go lead the battle.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exactly like that.
You know what I think? I think that Stannis and Davos should just kiss and make up.
Oh, speaking of that. Okay. Catelyn and Brienne were totally gonna kiss at the end of that scene where she swears allegiance to Catelyn, and they're like all close, and Catelyn's like, I will invite you into my home. I will never turn you away. And then there's like, they're really close and they're loving it, and then it cuts away. I was sure that they were about to make out. I was so disappointed.
You're crazy. She was so in love with Renly.
Oh, obviously. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but she's over it now. They're traveling the countryside.
She's moving on.
What made Brienne swear allegiance
to Catelyn? Like Thelma and Louise.
I did not expect
that.
Really, yes, totally.
We don't grieve for our dead like people do in Sweden, Selena. We move on.
Catelyn only had to say, get him later, 100 times, and then Brienne was like, okay, I'll swear allegiance to you instead.
I like how Catelyn was working in, so she was like, hey, Rob's pretty honorable. You're kind of a badass. I mean, Rob's cool. Yeah. He's my kid.
No, they really had like a heart-to-heart, though. Like, I was shocked, and I like Brienne now. But what made her swear allegiance to Catelyn? I don't get it. Because it's like one thing to travel with
she
somebody.
The relatability.
She respects and honors.
Yeah. She's a knight as well, and I think she needs someone to fight for.
Yeah, otherwise, so that's what gives her purpose in life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Times were different.
Plus, she was there for that
there.
Whole conversation between Catelyn and Renly when Renly was talking about Rob. So maybe that had a bearing on it.
That's the other thing. But since Brienne was inducted as a member of the Kingsguard, of Renly's Kingsguard, is that the right term? She's the only one we've seen with
the Rainbow Guard.
Yeah, the yes. Rainbow Guard. That's
it's
right.
No
that's
more.
Right. Okay, but she's the only one we've seen with him. So did he not have any Rainbow Guard before? Because like she's the only one in the tent. She's always around him, but she's the only one. Like, where are the other members
well,
of the Rainbow Guard?
Is part of it too.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to television, people.
She wasn't expecting
sometimes
to be
they
attacked.
Do things.
You know, by anyone, because she was just with.
They were just
Catelyn.
Chilling.
Why were they? Why was she? Why was she chilling? Why wasn't you know his boyfriend
because
chilling with them or
something? Because she's a chick. She was just chilling. Come on, leave her alone.
Oh, yeah. Nobody expects to be attacked by their own shadow or a smoke monster with a sword through the heart. And that thing went right through his heart, man. He was dead within seconds.
Yeah, he wasn't alive after
no.
that.
No.
All right.
That
this is my. This is my slow but sure move on because we do need a transition toward the end of the episode this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, yeah.
I really wanted to talk about the party scene really quickly because I thought that the people that Daenerys brought to the party, they just reminded me. I've seen people like that at nice parties.
Stealing your shit?
And, yeah, exactly.
Not stealing my shit. Yes, I've thrown a few and that's happened. Actually, never mind. That's happened recently.
Didn't that happen in St. Louis?
Oh, no, wait. No, you lost your magic wand, Terrence.
Oh,
that's
I
what
did.
Happened.
I did. That's right.
Terrence is like, no, it's no big deal. I was like, Terrence, it's the elder wand. Lose this. I just thought the whole thing was crazy because we had the dragons. We had even before that we had Daenerys and her bikini cobblers. Oh, I fixed your shoe, and the it was just crazy. Like the dudes are just stealing shit, and then you know Captain Creepyface walks up and starts to talk, and I was just like, oh man. She looks like a bookshelf.
What?
What? Who looks like a bookshelf?
A second ago, we were talking about Captain Creepyface. Do you mean the girl, the woman?
Yes, who was wearing a mosaic of
yes,
face
that did not
on
look
her
comfortable.
Face.
Right. That did
that
not look comfortable
so
at all.
Strange.
That was
stylish?
No. That could not have been. I mean, that's just that it was. What was it like?
Mike,
metal
okay?
plates, like little yeah. decorative metal plates woven into.
I thought she belonged in the Capitol.
Yes, it's true.
I thought she was
that's
married
she
to Cobra
like.
Commander. That's what it looked like.
Well, she gave a warning, and I'm a little bit too distraught to share this warning with you guys before we leave this episode. But what was this warning? If one of the two more legit people on this podcast could say,
Selena, Micah.
Well, she gave it to Jorah, right?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Don't let our faith slip, you two.
Why?
You're the only two holding this podcast above water.
God, I have no idea. It's 3 a.m. I'm excused.
Hang on. I'll Google it real quick. Captain no. Creepyface.
Google images.
What did she say?
Don't Google
well,
image.
He was from the House of the Undying, that guy. And he wants to invite Daenerys
Pyatt
to that place. Yeah, and I think that's really cool. I'm so looking forward to learning more about the House of the Undying.
You're talking about the girl that showed up with the
I'm talking
what
about whatever's going to be more funny when I edit it. So you choose which one.
She has a reoccurring presence throughout the series. I'm not sure who she is or where she's from.
It is known.
She's
no, it is not
M,
it is not
I
known.
Think.
Oh, okay.
Gosh.
Quaithe of Ass High. I'm sorry.
What?
So, nothing left.
What?
And with that, people, we must start ending this week's episode of Game
Wait,
of Thrones.
Before we go, okay, Selena, I was wondering, were you entertained by the last scene of this this week's episode before the tickler died?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Micah. I was wondering how I was going to slip a shirtless Gendry in a conversation full of guys, but yeah, there you go. I was not expecting that, but it was very much appreciated.
Arya had her head turned a little bit.
Oh, yes, she did.
I'm very much a fan of Gendry and that her and Arya and Gendry's friendship as well, so it was great to get that, you know, because even though they're doing two completely different things now, it was good to just see them have a little scene together and keep establishing
She totally schooled him,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This little girl is teaching this big guy how to throw a sword, basically.
Yeah, but she had Cyrio Forel, though, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She knows her shit.
I'm hoping that he's still alive. Maybe he's on the island with Ned Stark and Renly. Because her trainer, really, he's my favorite character from the first season. And, you know, because I guess I like the heroic ones, but then Renly, but I don't know. You're right, I do like weird
And
characters.
Then Theon, you like Theon too.
Currently, he has not killed anyone I care about. So currently, Theon is still a little crazy.
I mean,
Except for all the little women and children that he's about to kill. And rape.
Not yet.
I like Theon, by the way.
Oh, good, Zach. Okay, we have something to.
I do like
something
Theon.
To talk about next time we hang out.
I was just gonna say really quickly, Eric, that I do agree with you that at this point in the show, I think you can feel really bad for Theon. Like, I think he definitely goes through some pretty bad things.
Hi, Winterfell. My name is Theon Greyjoy. Yeah, you might remember me. I have the sea bitch back there, and I felt up my sister. So,
yeah. God, can you imagine any of these characters at like an Alcoholics Anonymous? Like,
all right, let's start giving our owns of the week before we start rambling on about Seabiscuit. All right.
Wow.
Okay, I'll go first. I have a pretty tame one this week anyway. My own was Tyrion to Cersei. He said, "Schemes and plots are the same thing." And for some reason, that just made me laugh for like 5 minutes.
I was going to say that.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. It was so funny, though. We can have the same one just because it was so funny. And I was like, the best owns are the ones that you do with words. So there you go.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, hey, you know what? Impressive. Nice choice.
You too.
Mine is also when Tyrion was talking to Cersei, but it's about Marcella, and he says, "Marcella is a sweet little girl, and I don't blame her at all for you."
Yeah.
And she gets all pissed. She's like, "Oh, you're so clever."
I have one, and if it fails, I got another. So here's – I'm prepared. One is whenever Theon was trying to command the respect of his men, and that big old bald dude comes up to him, and he goes, "I've been reaping and raping since before you left Balin's balls."
Yeah.
That was good.
Oh, my God. I'm going to start the episode with that quote, actually.
Oh, good. Well, then.
So I'm going to pick a different one, Selena, because I'll be damned. I will be damned. I'm going to have to go with...
Don't pick mine. Okay. I realize that's the biggest risk going last, but...
I think my own's probably going to have to go to Arya and Gendry when she's teaching him about how to use the sword, and she tells him to stand sideways, and he's like, "I'm just practicing," and she's like, "Well, if you're going to practice, you should do it right," and I just thought that made a lot of sense, and it was the best own.
Mm. And since I can't do every scene with Charles Dance in it or Tywin in it because I thought he was tremendous this episode, I'm going to go with Jorah and Daenerys when he says, "There are times when I look at you and I still can't believe you're real."
Did that own your soul, Eric?
That owned my soul. And let me tell you guys, let's bring it in here a minute. Let me just tell you guys, there are times, okay, when I visit our website, gameofowns.com, or I follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/gameofowns, or I like us on Facebook, and I still can't believe that we're real.
Oh, God.
But then, you know, you go on hypeable.com and you realize that we're all real.
So. We're all real. And our pictures are shining brightly on the front page and we get to see the comets.
Everyone
gets unsettled. What's wrong? You guys don't like
it's
Selena
so
as Daenerys?
Creepy. All of you. It's Micah. It's the scariest one.
I didn't know that you weren't blonde, Selena, because it works so well.
Well, you know, Swedish people. And, you know,
similarly, yeah. Similarly, I didn't know that I wasn't Littlefinger, but whatever.
Right.
I like how these strategically placed violins are making us sound so glorious while we're talking about the show.
I always
do you hear that
along,
sound, Micah?
I can't because I don't know when it's playing.
Well, there you have it, guys. This is Game of Thrones, your favorite ever Game of Thrones podcast.
That's true.
And if you would like to be a friend of ours, we would like to be a friend of yours. I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Selena Wilkin.
And I am Terrence Pinkston.
Man, we got to talk about Charles Dance. I hope he's on the next episode.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Girls do.
They were just like girls? Just shouting at each other, trying to like.
Yeah,
get
she's
to
not
their
a princess.
Attention.
She's a Khaleesi.
She's a Khaleesi.
And I'm like, but wait, no. Isn't she also a princess? And I was like, wait a minute, I'm confused.
I just like the hot one. Let's be honest.
Yeah, the other one's kind of.
Yeah, she was. You know, it's funny. Sidebar. She was supposed to die on the road. She did in the book, and I think it's funny that they chose to keep her alive. I thought they might do that. Because
so they could show she's her a babe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
You got to keep those babes close. They were shooting in Iceland. They had slim pickings.
Hey, that's pretty close to here.